Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You're about to listen to Goosebuds. This is Chad Quant. This feed is free, but if you want to hear these episodes earlier and ad-free, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/goosebuds, which also gives you bonus episodes, our Discord, and more. Please subscribe to support the show. Now enjoy this episode of Goosebuds. Jordan, how the hell have you been, man? Like, you've been writing and working nonstop, like hustling in the comic book scene. But like, what are you up to since last week you were on the podcast?
Yeah, let's see. So yeah, I've been doing. I don't know if the last time I was on the pod, I was plugging comics, but I have been doing some comics lately. It's been a lot of fun. I've done a couple of originals and some IP stuff. Yeah, my newest graphic novel. By newest, I mean it's a year old.
Yeah. Still relatively.
It's called Youth Group. It is with a great artist named Bowen McGurdy, and yeah, it's about teenage exorcists. It's kind of like a YA horror comedy about teenage exorcists. It's kind of got like Buffy vibes and Shaun of the Dead vibes, and yeah, it's kind of based on my experience growing up in kind of a goofy, cringy, hip youth group in Orange.
Dude, I was going to ask you about it because I was the same. I was deep into a youth high school, non-denominational Christian youth group. I actually I don't practice anymore.
Yeah,
I have no. I think I loved that group, but it was definitely very like, oh, we're a bunch of dorks. We're a bunch of
right.
What could you say, like, get into your one that you grew up with? Like, was there a certain denomination to it?
Yeah, I think it was Baptist, but like I
oh,
think
oh okay a little more
you
severe,
know
right?
I think. You know, I think it would be recognized as evangelical. I think that's also something you could probably call it. And yeah, it was very chill. Let me know if any of this.
No, I'm down. I know religion is a weird topic, but I think.
Oh,
it's
no,
like,
not at all. I was going to say, let me know if any of this seems familiar to you.
Right? Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
it was
yeah.
a, you know, hip youth pastor, guy with a bunch of tattoos, sits backwards on the chair. Maybe he's got a surfboard in the truck. That's a regional.
Yeah,
detail,
which
of course.
You say, what state were you in for there to be surfing?
Oh, it's Orange County, California.
Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, so it makes sense. Yeah, okay, yeah. Not just in the middle of Michigan. I got a surfboard in case the flood
comes.
You never
know.
Yeah.
Right. In case we get a Noah's Ark 2 situation, I'm going to shoot the curl while God destroys the world. I'm going to get barreled while God destroys the sinful.
God, I can't wait. I actually did not have a hip youth pastor. I had a hippie 60-year-old hip youth pastor, a guy named Terry, who wore like blue jean overalls.
Terry.
Long, curly, but like very much, it was non-denominational, but I grew up Presbyterian, which is like, that was kind of like Methodist. I think chiller, as things go. My dad read the newspaper in church to my family's dismay and horror that he would just crumple the paper loudly while I was playing in the youth band.
Just laugh at Marmaduke really loudly.
Oh, Marmaduke. God doesn't know what you're doing.
You know that stealing those sausages is a sin? Dogs don't
Is Marmaduke still going?
Boy, great question. I wonder what the most recent Marmaduke comic
I'm looking it up because every once in a while I see a Heathcliff comic strip, and I don't know if you're familiar. Heathcliff has gone off the rails.
Yes, I am very familiar with Heathcliff's Second Life as a kind of weird meme because, yeah, the Heathcliff comics, I think, you know, we remember Heathcliff as like a rascally cat, you know, who ate out of garbage cans.
Yeah.
Just like a cat Marmaduke, basically.
Yeah.
But now they're just these kind of like Dadaist, almost like Adult Swim or like early Adult Swim kind of nonsense comics. And you kind of wonder if the people making it want it to be like that, or if they're trying for a joke that's just not landing. They're so strange.
It kind of reads now. I don't know the current. It looks like I'm sure it's passed down, right? The current creator of Heathcliff is probably dead.
Yes,
it does feel almost kind of like worse than what AI would generate for a Heathcliff strip. Not in a bad way. Just like, why is Heathcliff staring at an obelisk of meat, and then there's a guy going, "Ah, he's just staring at the meat obelisk." You know, Heathcliff, and that's the panel of the comic.
Yeah, right. It is something like that. Okay, I just kind of Googled Heathcliff comics.
Yeah.
Here is one that comes up. It is two shopkeeps standing outside a store that says meat.
Yeah.
And Heathcliff is in a blimp, like a Goodyear blimp, and it also says meat.
Yes, I think I've seen this one. Yeah.
And the caption is, "I'm surprisingly emotional." I don't know. I guess Heathcliff just loves meat so much that he's rented out a blimp to advertise this meat store. And the guy is surprisingly emotional about it. Yes, that is the current state of Heathcliff.
There's an absurdism. This is not a flex, Jordan. My very first paid gig out here, well, technically second, was to write a Heathcliff live-action adaptation.
No way.
Yeah, me and I think you know, because we were together, my former writing partner Aaron Walkie, our first gig before we like landed on anything big was we got put connected with, I'm fine spilling this tea on the podcast.
Yeah,
it's like
this is why people tune in. Industry insider secrets.
15-year animation industry old secrets. This group called Waterman Entertainment, who they made the like Alvin and the Chipmunks live action movies.
Okay.
You know, the squeakles?
They,
from what I could tell, was like an old guy who wrote for like 1980s PI detective films, created a production company, and was like, we're just going to buy the rights to IP that no one is kind of like half dead on like, you know, life support.
Heathcliff, great example.
Heathcliff.
Of like Alvin
the Chipmunks.
Something people kind of remember if you're a certain age.
Yeah, we can get it for cheapish, and then we'll do it. Like, at the time, it was really weird when we were coming in for meetings. It was this guy, Waterman, who was, like, you know, running it, him and his sons. And, like, they had a mock-up poster of Heathcliff going downhill in a shopping cart.
Yep.
And he had sunglasses, and it was like, the Permanator is back. And we were always like, is it a Terminator reference? Like, is he gonna kill it? And then next to it was a mock-up of a movie they had not gotten the rights to do yet, but it was Dr. Doolittle starring Robert Downey Jr. But they hadn't, like, who he did eventually did, like, 10 years later, he did that Dr. Doolittle movie, if you remember.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No one remembers it. After Iron Man, he's like, I'll do Hot Project, and then he did Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. I have not seen it, nor do I know anyone who's seen it. But yeah, I think he takes a weird swing with the accent.
So it's just this kind of studio, but they're like, yeah, we got the rights to some IPs. So we first, my brand partner and I did a couple takes on a live-action Brave Little Toaster.
Okay.
I think we actually did okay. I know Brave Little Toaster is kind of a sacred cow.
I love Brave Little Toaster.
Same.
Yeah, me and my sister, we're huge fans.
It's super dark.
It's got a great John Lovitz voice performance.
Oh, my God. The cast is great. You got some dark stuff. You got a vacuum cleaner that's trying to commit suicide by eating its own power cord. You got some dark stuff with cars. Anyway, sure. So we tried a lightish version of it of like, oh, it's about like iPhones and right to replacement and like kind of new tech replacing old tech. And
okay.
Yeah, we never... The news broke, and the AV Club wrote a scathing hot piece about Brave Little Toaster remake coming out, about iPhones. They're like, that's not really what it's about.
Oh, no.
We got savaged and killed it. And after that, long run story to tell you, Jordan, is they're like, oh, well, we want you guys to look at Heathcliff, because we have to write the Heathcliff. We're like, awesome, great. Did you know that Heathcliff came before Garfield, Jordan?
You know, is this a kind of a Hydrox Oreo thing?
Yes,
it seems to be where the knockoff becomes more famous.
Exactly. We were shocked in our research to find this out. We always thought Heathcliff was the knockoff. Heathcliff came first. Mm-hmm. So Jim Davis is not only a hack, but he's a thief.
I'm sure the rights would never permit this, but I mean, maybe that's the movie. Maybe that's the Perminator aspect. Heathcliff goes back in time
to
assassinate Garfield because he knows that in the future Garfield will usurp him as the hungry cat everyone likes best.
I love that. That's better than our take was not going to be producible, but I liked what we did. And it was basically that Heathcliff had his spotlight stolen from him by another orange cat.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's awesome.
And it was like the orange cat became the face of like a local cat food company. And like Heathcliff was a poor person living in the alleys and felt jilted. And he was like a revet. It was almost like an Amadeus or something kind of thing. Of like, he's Salieri. Did not get made. But I have a little attachment to Heathcliff. We're not here to talk about Heathcliff, though.
No.
Jordan, welcome to Goosebuds.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Goosebuds, a podcast where we give YA media the hard-hitting critiques they deserve, and sometimes we don't do YA media. Goosebuds is in kind of an evolution stage right now of what we're covering. I invite great guests like Jordan Morris. You're going to introduce yourself a little bit, but Jordan, a fantastic writer, podcast host, overall internet personality, I think is fair to say at this point. I think Cotton Candy Randy is blowing up all over the place, I see.
Oh, yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take internet personality. Yeah, as you mentioned, Cotton Candy Randy is a kind of weird character I do on the YouTube show Good Mythical Morning. He's kind of like a an it kind of character, but made of cotton candy.
It's great.
Pennywise.
It's kind of horror. Yeah, a little horrifying. But Jordan, when I reached out to you again, you know, it's been great having you on the show in the past. I think last time you were covering some form of Goosebumps or YA novel when you were on. I don't know if you recall what you covered.
I do actually, and I thought of it recently because I we were chatting pre-podcast. I moved recently, so I kind of like I packed up and reshelved all my books, and I found the copy of The Abominable Snowman of Pasadena.
Oh, hell yeah. That's a good one.
For the pod. Yeah, yeah. And I kept it. It's still, like, on my shelf.
You'll never read it again, but it's still on that shelf.
Right, yeah. Once a year, I like to sit down and...
That's a good one. We were in recent episodes we had Tim Jacobus, the artist of those covers, on, and that was when we talked about it a little bit of like, I feel like that's an iconic Goosebumps one.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember just as someone who was I actually moved from the Pasadena area, and I just remember as someone living in Pasadena, I don't think there was enough details about it. So
I don't think RL was dedicated to nailing the vibe of Pasadena in that book.
I mean, the Abominable Snowman should get a sandwich from the Roma Marketplace, you know? He should go see a show at the Tony-winning Pasadena Playhouse.
I love that. I actually know very little about Pasadena, so I love these polls that I totally think are the hot spots of it. Shout-out to – the only thing I know in Pasadena is – shout-out to Remainders, a fantastic craft store in Pasadena.
Oh, I don't think I've been to Remainders.
If you ever want to put together an arts and crafts project with some donated Hollywood film studio materials, Remainders is your place.
Oh, okay. That actually sounds kind of cool.
Jordan, when I reached out to you about being on the podcast, again, thank you for coming back again. This has been a multi-month-long thing of scheduling. A lot of it is my fault. Some of it's God's fault.
Yeah.
But I asked, like, what you want to come on? We're not just doing Goosebumps anymore. We're going to do some more RL Stine, listeners. I promise. We're going to do some more. I just need a little break. But, Jordan, what's something that's really important to you from your childhood, from your youth? And you picked a great one. You picked Poltergeist.
Yeah, so Poltergeist is one of the first movies I remember really scaring me. And I was a real scaredy cat as a kid. Yeah, I like didn't get brave about horror movies until like kind of late high school. Just and it was kind of out of necessity because like I feel like our, you know, I went to high school in kind of the late 90s and like horror was like having that post Scream, mm-hmm. you know, boom, like Scream came out and then
kind of
know.
Meta aware. Was it that era of it where like,
you know, I don't think they were all meta like Scream was, but I think just the. You know, maybe horror had taken a little break. It was kind of this, you know, maybe seen as this kind of cheesy thing that went direct to video. And then Scream was this huge hit. And then, you know, you got I Know What You Did Last Summer. You got the first Final Destination. Right. You got Urban Legends.
Oh, man.
The
yeah.
Faculty. Need I list more classics? Mm-hmm. And then so all of those were out. And that was just like what my friend group was doing on the weekends, was going to see horror movies. And so I kind of had to like get brave a little bit. I think the first one that I remember seeing like with friends from high school was Event Horizon, which fucked me
oh,
up.
I've still yet to see Event Horizon. I got to.
I watched it kind of recently in 2025. Not super scary, but definitely like a cool movie.
That's the one that like every sci-fi thing about wormhole references, right? Because they do the really understandable, like here's a point on a paper and I'm moving the paper points together. And it's like,
yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I get how a wormhole works now. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Who needs to go to, 8 years of space college? I just... That diagram.
Sam Neill can just take a pencil and a paper mm-hmm. and just make you understand it immediately.
But I saw Poltergeist at a friend's house, like in the maybe late 80s, maybe I was 10 or 11 or something. And there was a family on our street that was that was kind of an anomaly. They were this is the Gaspars. And they had,
oh,
like,
great kids. Last name, by the way.
I just, know. Like, it's good. It's name. A great name for like a neighbor, a family you grew up near. So they had kids my age. So I would play with them. And they were like very Christian. Like they were, you know, they were super Christian.
Put a cross up in their front yard every Sunday. You know, that kind of.
Yeah. And so to the point where like the kids, I remember... They had bought a like Sega Genesis with their own money, but they had to like hide it in the closet so their dad couldn't find it. And so like when dad was gone, they would take this Genesis out of the closet, play NHL Hockey 94. And then when they like
the
heard their
sport,
dad,
yeah,
yes, well, it had fighting in it.
it had the New Jersey Devils, I believe, right? So
oh yeah,
right,
sure, yeah. The most sinful hockey team.
Yeah.
So these kids would like when they heard the garage door open, you would have to like take the Sega Genesis down really quick and put it back up
awful.
In the closet.
Ugh.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, this dad was so permissive about horror movies. Hmm. Like they were also, I'll just to give one more detail about their religiosity. Their dad was a dinosaurs never existed guy.
Oh no.
And like tried to convince me that like dinosaurs were a creation of the museum industry. Yep.
Not even big that they oil, existed, big but steel, were at the same time, just they were fake. They were dinosaurs were fake.
Yeah, they're just there to, like, yeah, sell museum tickets.
Oh, all these museum people are like, we have these giant buildings. We have no one's coming into them. What do
right,
we do?
We have to invent fake animals.
Fake animal lizards.
But for whatever reason, this guy who thought that, like, Sega Genesis and dinosaurs were sinful... was like, okay, just watching horror movies. Like they had, you know, I would go over to their house. We would watch Freddy. We would watch Jason. And we, you know, one night during a sleepover, we watched Poltergeist. And it fucked me up so bad. I was so scared of that movie. And so, yeah, it was one of those that I'd always just like regarded as, oh, this is a seminal like thing that scared me. The like images are, you know, burned into my brain. And I'm like, oh, this would be a fun thing to rewatch and see if it scared me as bad, or it would be a fun thing to kind of revisit and see if it like had the same effect. So,
oh, I'm glad to talk about it. I mean, maybe there's a certain scene you want to call it. I had similarly not at a super Christian house, but went over to a friend's for a sleepover. My best friend Adam, who we only really connected over the fact that we loved Weird Al, and we saw Weird Al together probably 12 times in the Midwest together.
Oh, nice. County fairs, maybe?
Yes. Look at, hey, Weird Al was in some stadiums.
No,
Jordan.
No, no. I'm that's where I saw Weird Al as a kid, okay, at the Orange County Fair.
Let's make sure we're not casting dispersions on Weird
no,
Al.
No, no, no. I'm not. No, this isn't a slam at Al and his drawing power. I'm just saying that's in, you know, I think in the 90s, that was.
No, that's true. That was a cultural way for sure. Yeah. But yeah, brought had me over to their place. Had a, well, it's like, oh, it's Poltergeist. It's PG.
Right. Yeah. That's another wild thing about. the like, I mean, you know, the great example is like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is PG and it has like all that shit in it, and I could see why you just put this movie on for kids.
It'd be fine. I think PG-13 I read had not existed yet at the time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think we needed another thing.
We needed a middle ground between this and R.
So yeah, it's like, nobody fucks the ghost. It's fine. Let the kids watch it.
The point that I tapped out of that movie, which has been so fascinating now to watch 20 years later, the tree attack scene.
Oh, the tree, yeah. I was terrified of the tree.
That tree scene is like 20 minutes in, right? So I also basically tapped out and spent the entire movie hiding under a blanket at my friend Steve Wilber.
You didn't see the clown, you didn't see the bodies coming up from the ground. Yeah,
that tree coming out the window, grabbing a boy, and I had just already probably closed my eyes at that point. Tries to eat the child.
Yeah,
that tree is boring a child.
I know.
Do you have a certain scene that was your like hallmark of like this is too much for me?
Yeah, you know, just like the idea of like the girl calling out like mom, but like not being able to find her was really scary to
that's
me.
Emotional, like,
yeah totally, like being able to like see your parents but not to be able to like get to them. I don't know, there's like a weird, you know, dissonance there. Yeah, and just when you finally see the fucking thing come out of the portal and it's this like giant devil skeleton,
like, yeah, it's that. Like a Ghostbusters monster.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
No, those are totally valid. You're a braver man than I am. I tapped out way too soon. So I'm going to rewatch
this. The tree is very scary.
Yeah, the tree. Dude, that tree, by the way, in the beginning, when they see that tree, that already is a bad tree. That is a, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's just gnarled. There's not a single branch on it. It's just... Yeah. You should have taken that out.
Chop down that tree. Nothing good's coming out of that tree. Probably got some evil squirrels in it.
Yeah, that would have been great. As the boy's being eaten, the squirrels are coming and just like picking out his eyeballs or whatever. We're going to be half of the tree. We don't have to go through beat by beat of this movie, Jordan, but I'm kind of curious about certain stuff to talk about. I find this movie really fascinating in retrospect that it is a Toby Hooper film. Who I mostly know from Chainsaw Massacre. I haven't seen a lot of his other stuff.
He's got a cool, weird, interesting filmography. This movie included, and I think that the story of it is something Spielberg maybe wanted to direct at one point, but then thought maybe it was off brand for him. So he kind of wrote this and produced it and then gave it to Toby Hooper, I think.
No, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of like kind of half stories about who did what on this.
Right.
That Spielberg even I'm feeling very much for Toby Hooper, because a lot of the interviews I looked up was either Spielberg in kind of passing comment saying something to a reporter of like, well, you know, Toby's not really a take charge kind of guy, and I was on set and I boarded all of it, and if someone had a question, I made a call. It's almost a little unfair to Toby Hooper, who is clearly the director of this film, right? Like, at some point, there was maybe an argument that Spielberg only couldn't direct it because he was directing E.T. at the time. And he couldn't contractually direct both films. So maybe he was doing a sort of like under-the-table directing. But Toby Hooper... his name is on it, so I feel like you gotta respect him on this. But
yeah, and it's so like it's such a like chaotic movie, and like when the shit hits the fan in this movie, like there's Spielberg shit all over this. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, it's you know, there's like so much family stuff. There's
the
like
Amblin
the family
type
falling
Hallmarks.
Apart.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, it's his little like version of 80s suburbia. So like it is very Spielberg in many ways, but like. This movie, when it goes crazy, goes so fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And just has every kind of monster and every kind of, like, supernatural thing happening at once. And that is, like, so the, like, you know, third act of Texas Chainsaw. It's just so crazy and so frantic. And, like, yeah, I don't know. It seems like that is, like, you know, it you know, a lot of cooks in this kitchen, obviously a lot of very good cooks.
Yeah.
You know, and the rewatch of this, I loved this movie. It's a great movie, I think.
Yeah.
But that Texas Chainsaw insanity is like so much of a part of the last part of this movie.
I've heard the character's name when there's the three investigators to come in. This movie's pacing is really interesting. But around the time the family has brought in the first set of psychics and paranormal investigators, and the guy goes into the mirror, the bathroom, and starts just like hallucinating and pulling his face off. And it's like a practical, it's like jelly.
Right.
But it's like really gross.
Totally. Right?
Before you realize it's a hallucination. that feels more than even somehow Chainsaw Massacre in some way, in how gross
it is. Yeah, and it is even this weird little like aside. It doesn't really have anything to do with anything. It's just to like, and it does seem like there was an element of this, of like, here's this thing we want to do. We want to do a face peel. We want to do a Ghostbuster style demon that comes out of a, you know, pulsating, you know, jelly wall.
Like, yeah.
And then they kind of just dumped it all in. It's like the house can do whatever. You know, it's the house's power set is very unclear. It just kind of like makes any weird thing happen that they wanted to do. And I don't know, there's something fun about that too, of like, it's just them going like, here's all this stuff we want to do. Let's all dump it into one movie. It's really neat that part of it is so fun.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I think you're totally right, Jordan. It's packed with stuff. Reading about some of the cut things they wanted to do in this movie.
I haven't read about that.
I'm glad they did. There were some crazy level. Multiple drafts of this film apparently had Carol and the daughter dying.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
just,
that'd be a
just
bummer.
Dead, and then her, and then instead of like we're trying to find her in the paranormal world, we are like, oh, that's her ghost now, like haunting us. There was some stuff of like Craig T. Nelson getting possessed and then having sex with his wife, which is like, what are we doing, y'all?
Okay.
Like,
yeah,
maybe we pull back on some of the. There's like a darker script that apparently Spielberg. It was like, don't kill the kid.
Yeah.
Come on, like probably the right call to make.
Yeah, those are the good Spielberg instincts, I think.
I think you're right, though. They threw everything at this. I also really just kind of appreciate the pacing of this film.
Me too. You know? I really like
and,
it,
and
too.
Again, I know I'm coming as a battered Goosebumps listener. So much, I feel like, the cliche horror story. When you think of like a bad horror, an average to bad horror movie.
Yeah, really, sure.
It's like spooky stuff will start to happen, but then act one and act two is like one person's aware of it. Mm-hmm. Right, and like, and the parents aren't believing them, or like, I swear I just saw a skeleton driving the car, but by the time they look away, the skeleton's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. I love that spooky stuff starts happening like immediately. Right, we have Carol Ann waking up to the national anthem because TV used to not have 24-hour cycle. Everyone on TV was like, "That's it, go to bed."
We don't have any more shows.
We're out of ideas.
We can't think of anything else to put on TV.
Ted Turner hasn't had the crazy thing that'll ruin our country of 24-hour news
right,
cycle.
Yeah, I know, geez.
But even by then, like, Carol, she's getting lured down, and it's a little spooky. She's talking to the TV people. But, I feel like the first 5-10 minutes by then, it seems like the mom has discovered, hey, chairs are stacking, and by the way, look, I've created a scientific experiment where if you put a chair in the circle, you'll slide across the floor.
I love that part, and something that's so fun about that is, like, the mom thinks it's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, mom. She's, like, high-kicking, yeah.
And she's such a great character. She is such a, like, fun, cool character, whereas, you know, like, the mom or the parents in a horror movie could just be these kind of, like, one-dimensional,
absolutely,
you know, things that are there to get killed or things that are there to, like, not believe the kids. But, like, she is so fun. And, like, he, you know, and he's kind of, like, the Craig T. Nelson dad is kind of, like, coded to be kind of a Reagan guy. I think he's even maybe reading a Reagan biography at one point.
Oh, I didn't catch that. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some little details that kind of point to him being a, you know, Reagan-y conservative. But, like, she is kind of this, like, more fun. She's smoking weed at one point.
Yeah, and I think they're both in the bed smoking weed, which I was okay, cool. And yes, there's Republicans who smoke marijuana. But there was something that was like, in the 80s, where are they getting their weed hookup at?
Great question. About. Yeah, probably a kid at the arcade, you know?
maybe one of those kids at the very beginning
where everything
that are
bad happened.
Well, there's those kids at the beginning with the RC car.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Mess with, I think that's Dirk Blocker from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh.
The guy's like, he's like carrying an arm full of beers, and they trip him up, and then he runs into the game carrying, just still spraying cans, and no one's really upset about it.
That's funny.
Yeah, there's like a few little, but by the way, not to go backwards, there's a little bit something interesting of that, like the joke of my neighbor's remote is messing with my TV signal. It feels like it's already started. There's a little bunch of little things that are like kind of about spatial intrusions, right?
Yeah, sure. I know, right. It's the suburbs. We're kind of all on top of each other. We find out they're literally on top of something.
Literally on top of something.
Yeah, it is, yeah, there is something kind of fun there. There's like a fun little running theme about like, you know, people in each other's space and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, to make your mom, yeah, the mom who's a pot smoking, she's apparently, I don't think it's ever specified, it's interesting, she's the second wife of Craig T. Nelson.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah,
it's like an understated detail. It only came up because at some point Craig T. Nelson references his wife's age, mm-hmm. where it would have been like, oh, she would have been like 14 when you married her if she had kids at a certain age, and then in retroactively, oh no, she's the second wife.
Sure.
So her only children, it doesn't really matter, Jordan, but her only biological children are Carol Ann and Robbie.
Oh, okay.
And then the older daughter, who doesn't have a lot to do in this film other than be harassed by construction workers.
Right.
Does she even get, like, any real spooks? Like, I don't...
No, I think she goes to, like, stay with Grandma very soon in the movie. And, like, good call. It's definitely one of those things where it's like, you know, the haunted house movies aren't, you know, the beginning of The Haunting is never crazy. It's just chairs sliding around, right?
Yeah.
And then the people who, like, stay in the house when that shit is going on, you know, you're like, yes, someone go to a hotel, please.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They do this multiple times. They get her out, you're right, they get her out of there pretty quickly. And then, like, halfway through, Robbie, I think it's time for you to leave. We're getting you in a taxi cab.
Right.
It's a hard cut that makes it look like he's, it almost feels like he's leaving the family.
He's got his little suitcase.
He's got a little suitcase. Like, the dog goes with him.
Child suitcase.
But yeah, Carol Ann quickly gets taken, right? She's like sucked into a black hole during the tree voring scene. It's almost like a distraction. Mm-hmm. Carol Ann gets white holed, you know, it's like black hole of white, sucked into another dimension. Really terrifying scene.
I know. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's totally terrifying. And yeah, it's like, where is she? And the fact that we never like really see her too, like that's a really scary part of this movie. It's like, what is happening to her? Like, you never really know, you know, I think a like more hand-holdy movie or, I mean, I know they remade this. I never saw it.
Never saw it either.
Yeah. I could see how there would be a remake with like bad notes where it's like, oh, let's see her in the like, you know, Nether Realm, or let's see her in the ghost world or something like
talking
that.
Talking to Odin, like, or something surprised. It's a weird Norse religion. You're like, oh, I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just something that, like, makes it not scary, you know?
Absolutely.
But, yeah, the fact that, like, you just kind of don't know, and you kind of hear, you know, when Zelda Fitzgerald comes in. Oh, not Zelda Fitzgerald. What is this woman's name? I'm thinking of Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always forget her name.
Zelda Rubinstein.
Zelda Rubinstein. Yes, yes.
When she comes in, she's like, oh, you know, there's a beast, and she's near the beast, and like you get that little detail, and you're like, oh my god, what is this? Yeah. Anyway, just like the choice to not see her is so like is such a cool one,
and I was
really scared of it again.
It's avoiding. I'm a big hater of like CinemaSins on this podcast, mm-hmm. Jordan, and then what that sort of kind of bad notes like logic hole stuff has done to script writing, where you can feel movies scared of being CinemaSins, and they're like overly shoring up plot holes.
Right.
I never thought about it until this third or fourth rewatch. We keep rescheduling this podcast. I'd keep rewatching Poltergeist, and which is great. It's a great film.
Yeah.
But the fact that like they just don't call the cops.
Yeah.
Like, totally. And I'm not mad at it. They just don't call the cops at all.
Yeah, I know. It is like, yeah, they're like they're accepting of it is kind of like strange, you know. But it's something I like about it, and like. The like time jump after Carol Ann gets taken, and then the paranormal investigators coming over, It's like this idea that they've just kind of been living in this house,
yeah,
talking to her. You know, it's kind of a little like, you know, they're just like, they can't move on. They're obsessed.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just kind of like sitting in their grief. They don't go to a hotel. They just like stay in this house that ate their kid. It's really like, there's this kind of like, again, the third act of this movie is so crazy, but like the second act of it is very like kind of melancholy, kind of sad, like, you know.
Yeah, they're almost like, they're accepting, yeah, they're not accepting that she's dead or gone, but they've accepted the reality that ghosts took their daughter.
Right.
and just, yeah, living, like the fact that they, and they do this multiple times, it's almost, I think it's kind of a comedic moment of, you know, going by the bedroom door and the mom just kind of like knocking on it the way you would ask your kid if they want like breakfast.
Right.
And there's just a beastly scream at them and they're like, oh, okay, never mind. It's like our child has become a demon, but it's, right, it's not that.
But
way.
We've accepted it. We're like living with it. Yeah. Yeah. And I know. But it's all like their dedication to her is very sweet. Even when she's like, you know, in the ghost realm, it's
yeah. Why do you think they targeted Carol Ann? Is it just because she's a child's mind is more open to ghosts?
Oh gosh, Zelda Rubinstein says something like that of like, oh, she's a calming presence and she like calms the monster or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, she's a light that represents life. And I'm like, but all of them would at some point, right?
Right,
like,
they're all alive, I guess. And
Craig T.
Yeah,
Nelson, you're dead inside. You don't count.
Right, yeah, you're a fucking Reagan asshole. you're just part of the system, man.
There's one detail, and again, this is, don't need to know this. It's just kind of fun to like surmise at how much of the thought process was. Mr. Teague, the boss, played, I love this guy, James Caron, from Return of the Living Dead. He's so good in that.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's probably the worst guy in this movie, right, the real estate developer,
mm-hmm,
I still kind of like him, right? Like,
yeah, me too.
He's a really lovable dude. I didn't notice until this last rewatch when he and Craig T. Nelson are walking up to where the cemetery is now, and Craig first hears about, oh, you guys had moved the, you know, the burial grounds before.
Yeah.
It's mentioned that Carol Ann was born in that house.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's some sort of like a birth happened in this tainted, you know, burial space. So we feel like we have some sort of, you're our daughter too, says the ghost.
Right,
it's a reach, but you know, something like
that.
No,
it's good, and I think that like it has a lot of little clues like that. And I think, and again, like, you know, and maybe this is, you know, maybe we think about these things a lot because we do, we are writers who receive notes from people, and like you,
yeah,
it is, you know, it is depressing to think about like if they tried to remake this, what the weird hand-holdy notes would be, and you would get a like explanation for this that wouldn't be that cool and would be kind of a bummer. And yeah, so I know I like that there's so many mysteries in it, but you do
they over explain the clown. Probably they'd be like, oh, that clown was given to you by your grandpa,
right,
who
sure
was crazy or just mm-hmm something. No offense to that movie, but none of this is correct, but I totally feel you. I feel like that there would be a lot of, we have to explain every part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the major stuff, I feel like the middle part of this movie, yeah, very quickly is Our daughter's in the walls. We don't know how. I like that no one is really incompetent, you know? Like,
yeah,
the three first paranormals feel like that could have been a really basic thing, even though they're way over their heads, right? There's the recorder sound guy going like, hey, you know, I have footage of a matchbox car moving 7 feet over an entire day. It's pretty wild stuff. It's such a great, like, oh, this is going to be a whole new level for them. But they're not idiots, right?
Yeah, right, totally. And I like that. Yeah, they're, because yeah, I think there's a version of this where the paranormal people are kind of like funny kooks, and like, you know, obviously like Zelda Rubinstein is like eccentric and funny in her way, but like she's good at, you know, she does the job, she knows what to do. And yeah, I think there's a worse version of this movie where like those people are all punchlines.
Yeah, it is interesting that and maybe he's just going through stuff. Craig T. Nelson, who is, we haven't said, I think he's just fantastic. Everyone's fantastic in this, but I love Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
did you grow up with, like, I grew up with Coach. as a sitcom.
Oh yeah, we watched a lot of Coach and his Coach and his buddy Dauber.
Dauber and yeah, not Jerry Lewis, but Jerry Lewis.
Van Dyke?
Jerry Van Dyke. Yeah, Jerry Dick Van Dyke. Dyke's okay. Brother, who did great. It was funny. I see you've probably worked at Nickelodeon too, Jordan. But like,
no, I've never worked at Nickelodeon.
Oh, you absolutely must. The fountain drinks are so good.
Ooh.
But
you know what? I did write a podcast for a Nickelodeon character that they never ended up making.
Oh, so can you say what character?
Oh, yeah, I guess I'm sure SpongeBob. We wrote a couple episodes of like a scripted SpongeBob
podcast. Oh, interesting. That's cool.
I know, it was really funny. I still find the script in my like little folders sometimes, and I'm like, oh, that was funny. They should have made that anyway.
I don't know. If that's the same similar. When I was at DreamWorks, they were doing like kind of not even a podcast, but like vlogs of their characters. And it was like Poe from Kung Fu Panda or Shrek will vlog, and it was we're trying to do this on the cheap, where we'll have someone in a green screen suit in a mocap studio just do 2 minutes as Poe,
right,
reacting to vlogs, and it was all, but like they can't move more than 1 foot out of space. I was trying to write for it at the time, and they're like, and we can't do any props. So really, just what is something that Shrek can talk about for 2 minutes,
right,
in a void? And they're like, oh, I imagine yours was much cooler than that. The reason I mentioned Nick is, Bill Fagerbach, Dauber from Coach, is now famously Patrick Starfish.
Oh,
from...
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I see him all the time, and everyone's always
very
like starstruck over
Patrick. Very funny voice.
He's an amazing, funny voice. I see him all the time, and everyone's always starstruck as Patrick, but I'm like, that's Dauber right there, right? Like,
you kids don't know. Dauber.
He's a football legend right there. You he coached. I feel like I got respect for Bill Fagerbach. I saw him meeting a tour about a week or two, Jordan. He's like walking through the studio to record. And I think most people are pretty good about to not like bother the actors when they're coming in and out. But the tour sees him and they're like, oh my God, Patrick Starfish, you got to do some photos with us. And he's being really nice about it. But I'm just kind of watching from the windows. And I'm like the Phantom of the Opera. I'm just hanging in the upper rafters of Nickelodeon. You see the tour guide, like he's making Bill do photos with all the guests, and they're like, hey, say something to Patrick. And that's not fair to make a guy just do something on the spot. So he just goes, and he just like just muttered, he just mumbled, and they loved it.
Noises.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I loved you doing the impression of it.
Thank you very much. Bill ever wants to step down, I will step in as Patrick Starfish.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sorry, that was way off topic, Jordan. We were talking about Poltergeist.
Oh, Craig T. Nelson. Very good. Yes, a legend. Goes on to be Mr. Incredible. Yet another iconic role.
I wondered now in Incredibles, I mean, it just worked for the story, but do you remember there's a bit in Incredibles where as he's getting in shape, he is like checking his gut in the mirror?
Mm-hmm.
They do this in this movie, too, where at some point he's talking to his wife while they're smoking weed and he's maybe used to be an Olympic diver. Or something. Oh,
that's funny. I didn't get that detail.
They're talking about diving form. Maybe they're just stoned and riffing, but it almost made it sound like he was a college diver.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like sucking in his gut in the mirror, looking back and forth. It's like, that's Mr. Incredible right there. That's right there. probably not an Easter egg, but I thought maybe there was a connection.
No, that's funny. I know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I could see Pixar putting that in there.
Maybe it's a reference to it. Anyway, yeah. So they've brought in, now we've lost at least one of our paranormal investigators, right? The third white guy, he did not like going to the bathroom and seeing his own face torn off. Maybe worth marking that trivia. Apparently that is Steven Spielberg's hands ripping off the mask.
Oh, cool. Great.
Yeah, he got in there.
That's fun.
He was on set. He's like, let me rip off that face. I've always wanted
Steve
to kill a man.
Steve gets in there. Steve gets in there. I know. The fun of making this movie is very, like, apparent. Like, I don't know. Maybe there were crazy, you know, on-set struggles and, you know, Toby Hooper was throwing mugs at people or whatever. But, like, this does seem really fun. And, yeah, just that element of, like, we have an idea for a crazy thing we want to do. It really, like, I don't know. It's super contagious. I was, like, having a blast.
No, too. It from all things I saw, there wasn't a lot of, like, drama on set other than, mm-hmm. you know, these sort of, like, after people kind of back and forth defending on how much Toby Hooper did versus Spielberg. The only thing I could see was Zelda Rubinstein had some things to say in the last decade or two about she didn't like Toby Hooper because she could tell he was addicted to drugs.
Okay.
But didn't say about bad behavior, just I could tell he was on drugs and didn't like that. And then James Caan, Mr. Teague was like, I don't know why Zelda Rubinstein was so mean about that. Toby Hooper was nice to all of us. So I don't know. It sounds like a nice set. It sounds
yeah,
like to
it does. Point. I know. And yeah, it's very fun that like Spielberg is like, I'm going to come to set and be the hands that peel off the face. That's like a great detail. I would too. Hey, if I was
producing
this movie.
Film, yeah. Get in there for it.
Like, I made Jaws. Let me peel off the face.
It's interesting too that like, so he's doing E.T. at the same time.
Okay.
Right? And there's weird, because again, it's like that California Arcadia like vibe, right?
Yeah.
Like, the E.T. house could have been down the street of this repeated home if they mm-hmm. really wanted it to. Tonally, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen E.T. This movie is so crazy compared to E.T.
Oh yeah.
Maybe you could say that third act of E.T. with the guys in the, you know, the military suits coming in and quarantining the house is a little mm-hmm. scary. Dying E.T. is a little spooky, but like, just totally wild to me to go from, yeah, kind of like a body horror film in this one to,
yeah.
to that.
And there's even kind of a moment in the like plot where you feel like they get her back, like they get Carol Ann back, and it's like, well, the movie's over. It's like, it's not really, you know,
no.
there's
yeah,
this
yeah,
whole
yeah.
other set of things that happen, and you find out about the bodies, and you have this crazy scene of the bodies like popping up from the ground. It is like, yeah, the movie is like unsettling, you know, I think because it is kind of like structured weird, like it feels like you don't really know when you're safe. And, you know, there is that time jump between when she goes in the TV and then the paranormal investigators coming. So it does feel like it is it's like super not traditionally put together or not traditionally paced. And I think that is like part of why it's, you know, it kind of is unsettling and you feel a little bit off base the whole time. It's like,
yeah, you can't predict the like, well, I can tell we're heading into act two and we got,
yeah, right. It's like, okay, they got her back. The movie's over, right? No, there's a whole other set of things are going to happen. Yeah.
I always think that's interesting. Yeah. So when they get Carolyn back and I kind of love how rudimentary this entire process is, right? It's like mm-hmm. throwing a tennis ball through a portal,
right?
Putting a rope around yourself and going into a portal.
It's funny that like a rope solves it. It's like, get a rope.
It's not to knock Zelda Rubinstein's Tangina. Mm-hmm. Tangina? I'm assuming it's Tangina. Medium. She is helpful. I also feel like it was one of those things where like, you ever hire like someone who comes to your house to like fix a light?
Mm-hmm.
And then after a whole bunch of work, you're like, oh, I could have done that. I feel dumb for paying them to do it. There's something about like,
right, how much did I pay this lady for a tennis ball and a rope? Jesus.
Yeah. The rates on this are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting.
Yeah, it's like when they replace your wiper blades at the car dealership.
It's the one car thing I feel good about doing, and I still mess it up sometimes. I get the wrong size, and it looks silly. I think it's interesting, her most iconic line, probably other than they're here, right? The most famous line mm-hmm. in this movie is, this place is clean.
Yeah.
But it's wrong.
It is, yeah.
The house is not clean at that moment. She was wrong.
Clean. Yeah, and it's like maybe like the house is, but the like land is so tainted, you know, that, you know, you can, you know, it's a like we cleared out the termites, but we didn't get the eggs kind of thing. So
Yeah, it's a great metaphor for it. And maybe it's because I hadn't seen it fully as a kid. I was so convinced, Jordan, maybe I'm just combining this with Pet Sematary, that I knew that, yes, the house is built on a burial ground. I was convinced it was like, oh, it's an indigenous person burial ground.
Yeah, I think I also like, you know, Mandela affected that too. I think we are so used to that trope of the like native burial ground being the reason for the haunting that, yeah, I think in my mind, I was like, oh, it is just a like, you know, it is a non-specific burial ground that they,
yeah, it's just, you know, some white folks
desecrated. Some nice whites.
It is interesting that Mr.
Whites
T,
can haunt too.
Whites can haunt too. You know what? It's about time we got some representation.
Thank you.
It's interesting, Mr. Teague, when he's talking to, I just call him Craig T. Nelson. I know these are the Freelings, but it just means it's Coach.
Character name. Who cares?
There'll be someone in the mean comments, respect Steve Freeling's name.
Right. Someone who's very into Poltergeist continuity, has read the novelizations.
Yeah, loves Poltergeist 2 and 3, and films that I have never seen.
I've never seen them either. This made me want to watch them. I will take a wild guess and assume that they're not as good, but I did have the notion after I watched this, I'm like, I kind of want to watch the other ones.
I read a little bit about Poltergeist 2 because I was surprised that it's the same cast. Like, the ghosts follow the Freelings to a new house.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, we want Carol Ann still. And there's maybe an evil old minister ghost that we are now saying is the Beast.
Okay.
Like, there was a main bad ghost, and that's the one. So, like, I guess it's an okay idea.
Yeah,
but
sure. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Like, at some point, what the hell are we doing? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There's got to be that line to it. But yeah, the big kind of turn, right, of like, this is, I love this, right? Such a great scene of learning early on that we've already realized we had moved the graves, and Mr. Teague is like, well, I think he even says, like, it's not like it's ancient burial. I think he even clocks the trope. Like, we move the bodies to it, leading to, yeah, that fantastic kind of fourth act of skeletons are popping up in the water. You know, Steve, Crazy Nelson going like, you move the bodies, or you move the headstones, but not the bodies.
I mean, such a good moment. That moment rips. It's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I
iconic, an iconic one. And I think I had just seen that referenced in pop culture so many years.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I bet a way that like a lot of people like took this movie in is like, it's a cable movie. Like, it is such a cable movie. And like,
it's on TV, you're going to watch it. Yeah.
And I was too scared to like finish it during my first viewing of it. But I feel like I saw these little chunks on cable throughout the years. And yeah, it is a kind of episode-y movie in many ways. Just, you know, it is all these little scare vignettes that like aren't super important to the bigger plot, but just these kind of like fun scare moments. We haven't even talked about the mom like going all over the ceiling.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. We haven't even talked about the clown.
The clown, the clown's been mentioned, but we haven't dug into the clown and what the clown means. Yeah.
It's one of those ones where, like, I guess I had toys that weren't really toys I dug. You know, like, oh, this is your grandma's or something.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know why that boy has that.
It's a family creepy toy. I know.
Yeah, an heirloom.
Yeah, it scared your mom and it scared your grandma. And her great grandma was terrified of this.
Please go ahead.
Oh yeah. So anyway, I think that like that's just kind of an interesting part of this movie's life is that like, oh yeah, it was just like a cable movie for decades that you could just like watch 10 minutes of. Anyway,
no, the pacing for it is great. I think like so much of this kind of third last of it, the fourth act, so to speak. When I say fourth act, right? You know what I mean, Jordan? Of like, Alien does this really well, right? The like we think this is done. Sigourney Weaver has won the day. She's getting ready for bedtime. Oh my God, there's a secret.
More
shit's going to happen. I love that in a good horror movie when they do it well.
Me too.
Yeah, this extra thing of like, we're still being haunted. That scene in the pool, they've been building this pool up this whole movie, right? And I don't know if you clocked it's not the most subtle thing, but I love that while they're digging the pool in the beginning, you see them upend the coffin of the bird.
Oh, yeah. I did. That is a fun detail.
They're already disturbing that gravesite.
Nothing is sacred to these people.
That, like, that scene of, like, the skeletons coming up, those are real skeletons, apparently.
Oh, wow, crazy. Where did they get real skeletons?
Well, maybe they just raided a mortuary. Apparently, that was cheaper to get real skeletons than fake skeletons.
No way. Okay. Fun fact.
Yeah, I've always, not to put you on the spot, Jordan, I don't know if you're an organ donor. I am an organ donor. Oh, I am terrified that my body will just be used for some dumb shit.
Right. A direct-to-DVD Amityville horror movie.
Yeah, they blow up my corpse for, like, the Amityville Crossing 3. And you're just right. Like, well, come on, guys. At least put me in a better film.
Thank you. Yeah, I know, right?
You don't have to say for it. That stuff is all fantastic. The house, like, sucking into itself, like a model.
Yeah.
Like a little model they built of it and then vacuumed it up with a power industrial vacuum and made it look like it was getting consumed into it.
I mean, it looks so cool. I mean, you know, dudes our age love to complain that there's no practical effects anymore, but oh my god, the practical effects in this.
It still looks good, man. I'm going to be an old man waving at, yelling at clouds about practical effects.
Oh,
I
sure.
It still
yeah.
looks better.
Me too. Yeah, it really, and this movie has, like, stuck around. This movie is, like, yeah, again, it was a cable movie for a long time. I feel like it's still a movie people watch, and yeah, because it still, like, looks cool. It's still scary. Like, the gross shit is gross, and yeah, I don't know. It is such a I love that this movie is, like, still around.
I like that passing through. I don't know if this was. I'm sure there's a reference to something else. I love that just passing through the veil, mm-hmm. going through the other world, just leaves you covered in jelly.
Yeah, again, something you'd never explain.
Yeah, we would have, like, gotten it's fine. It's ectoplasm.
It's
maybe?
Goo.
It's goo. It's ghost goo.
Yeah.
I wanted Caroline to be like, it's so gross in there. They're just they're just slimy.
I need a shower.
I mean, I know we're jumping to the end of the movie. There's certain stuff you want to talk about, Jordan. I think I just kind of was excited about the, without it being, like, too preachy, I think I just love this film being kind of a critique of, like, real estate developers and sort of, like, expansion, like, reckless expansion in that way and not respecting, you know, the past. There's some really cool stuff there with that.
Yeah, no, I know. And it is, like, a very much, like, a more fun, rompy version of, like, you know, like, beneath the suburban white picket fences, there is, you know, there are great horrors. And obviously that's, you know, like, a theme we've seen a lot, but this is such a fun version of that, you know? Yeah, it is. It's a total blast.
I think it's we both misread it. You didn't see this in the theaters, right? You saw this at home?
I think I saw this at the Gas Bars on VHS was probably
okay,
the first time.
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to the Gas Bars. It is crazy.
Why'd you let your kids watch all those horror movies? we're religious. Doesn't track for me.
It still doesn't track for me. It's the fear of God in you, maybe.
Yeah, and I guess, like, in a weird way, like, maybe not this movie, but, like, horror movies, you know, that have the devil and stuff are kind of saying, like, the Bible's real. Like, you know, like, The Exorcist is, like, a weirdly conservative, you know, Christian movie in many ways, I think.
Yeah, because the power of Christ has some power.
Right, yeah, exactly. And the, you know, it's the crosses and Bibles and stuff can be used as weapons. So, yeah, I don't know. So maybe that was part of their thinking.
No, that's great. I think I clocked this time. I wanted to write down the line, but I think Zelda Rubinstein, at one point when she's talking to the mother and having her sort of, like, meditate with her and try to talk to Carol Ann, I swear she says, like, you're like a Christian woman. Like, I think she, like, clocks it as a positive trait. So there's kind of just, went in all of these sort of moments, too. But this movie came out, I think this is just crazy that this is, like, at least early, not to be too nostalgic for the 80s and 90s, because we're awash in that day.
Sure,
day.
Yeah. I think it's imagine remembering the 80s and 90s.
Can you imagine? You heard this movie called Ready Player One, but it's crazy that this movie came out and then a week later E.T. came out.
No way.
Yeah, like, so because Spielberg was kind of doing both at the same time, but, like, that's an insane weekend at the movies
if you
want to do a double feature. Just
in your research, did you see if this movie was, like, a hit when it came out, or was it one of those, like,
I didn't get the box office. I did see it mentioned as it was a critical and commercial success. Okay. It was the eighth biggest movie of the year, I believe.
Okay, great, yeah.
So, yeah, again, this is another one that feels like it kind of would have gone under the radar, but I get how people were going to this and like, you gotta go see Poltergeist, it's crazy.
Oh yeah, totally.
Did you know the Poltergeist is a German name for they don't say that in the movie.
No, it would be a fun fact though.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Major stuff. I mean, I think that's kind of the best parts of this film. I mean, again, the clown, even though it's iconic, I think the clown was less scary to me than some of this other stuff, Jordan, personally.
The clown was less scary to you?
Yeah, I think the tree, I think the closet beast.
I have never really been a clowns are scary guy. I'm scared of it. I've felt scared of clowns in the past, but yeah, yeah. Like clown as, I don't know, it's never like worked on me.
Maybe that's why you as Cotton Candy Randy work so well, as you're conquering that fear, right?
Maybe, yeah, sure. Maybe I've conquered my fear by becoming it. I've become what I'm afraid of, like the Batman. I'm like the Batman in many ways.
Can you imagine if Batman decided to fight crime just dressed? Well, then he would just be the Joker. Wait, never mind.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
You know the thing that always scared me?
That'd be a fun twist, is like, I'm a clown now, too. Like, I'm also a clown.
That's my whole thing. What are you doing? No, that would actually really get under Joker's skin.
Yeah. A little bit. DC, if you're listening, we got ideas.
The thing, the small thing besides clowns that didn't scare me, Jordan, the thing that always got me as a kid, and this is very specific, was human mascots. Like, if I went to a sports game,
right.
I'm fine with a Philadelphia Fanatic.
Sure.
I'm fine with, like, a big hornet in a mascot costume. But if the mascot is, I have a giant human head, do not like that.
No,
do
you're not. Right. That shouldn't be. No one should do that. I agree with you. It's fucking sick is what it is. It's perverse.
Perverse, yeah. Make it a normal guy.
Make it a guy.
Walk around. Yeah, don't bait a giant foam human head over it. I think that's kind of Poltergeist, Jordan. I know you got a tight turnaround, too, so I don't want to keep you too long going about it. But I really thank you for letting me revisit this movie.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
I conquered some fears on it.
Yeah. I know. Kind of fun to see. I recently watched I had one of those, and I think people our age know this phenomenon of, like, I've never seen this movie, but the box scared me as a kid, or the poster scared me as a kid. I watched Creepshow not too long ago because, like, that was a box that scared
me.
Yeah,
no thank you. Yeah.
The, the skeleton in the ticket window. Anyway, I'm like, Creepshow's pretty cheesy. So I felt good about it. So, yeah, fun to, like, revisit an old, trauma point. And, yeah, I loved watching it, too. I think it's such a good movie. I was really, like, I totally loved it.
Might have to see Poltergeist 2 and 3 just to see this poor family run from ghost board.
I know. I kind of want to, too.
I have a feeling there's got to be a here we go again. There's going to be a line like that. There's no. In fact, if there's not, it's weird the family doesn't acknowledge that, boy, oh, boy, we're having a real hard time with this ghost. But, sure. Jordan, thank you for being on. I want to make sure, in case we didn't have it at the beginning of the episode, please, like, you have some fantastic books out. Bubbles, a really amazing graphic novel.
Thank you.
I have been waiting to read Youth Group, but we talked before of our personal connections to the church.
Yes.
And Youth Groups as it is. Were you ever a counselor in the youth group? Were you ever like that level?
No, I never got to that. I think I probably thought about it at one point. Like, it's a youth group leader is something that, like, a fun guy can be. Like, if you're a fun guy,
I could see you, like, leading a worship service. I mean, that's a compliment, Jordan.
No, thank you. And I don't deny that I do have some youth pastor energy. I'm, I'm self-aware enough to know that I have a little youth pastor energy. So, yeah, I think maybe it crossed my mind, but it was never something that I, like, looked into seriously.
I actually, for a while, considered going into the church when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And then my youth pastor was like, don't do that.
Oh.
And I took it as an insult. I took it as an insult. And then he had a very, like, real take of, like, there's less and less churches. The mega churches are taking everything.
Interesting.
Yeah, I actually kind of really appreciate him doing, like,
dying. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's less options. And, and unless you feel like there's no other calling to do, don't do this.
Right.
And I was like, well, I do like writing. So then I did write.
And then now here you are.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it. Sorry, that was...
Yeah, way to go, Terry.
We were mentioning this. Please read Youth Group, Bubble. Jordan, is there other stuff people should check out?
Youth Group from me and Bowen McGurdy. You can get it wherever you get your books and comic books. If you like spooky fun, Youth Group might be the graphic novel for you. And if you enjoy listening to podcasts other than this one, you can check out Jordan Jesse Go. That is my chat podcast with Jesse Thorne. Chad, you've been on once or twice.
Yeah, right? I've had a great time. Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Check out Chad's episodes of Jordan Jesse Go. It's just a friendly, fun fuck around every week. And then I also do a kind of new-ish movie podcast called Free with Ads with the great comics Emily Fleming and Matt Lieb. We mentioned the YouTube show Good Mythical Morning. They are part of that as well. And yeah, every week we watch a free with ads movie and talk about it. So
that's a brilliant idea, by the way.
Emily's pitch. Yeah, and definitely, yeah, just like a fun, weirdo little world of movies out there you can watch for free. And yeah, I can't imagine we won't be getting to a Poltergeist sequel at some point.
That might be free with ads. Yeah, that might be.
It's got to be. Yeah, that's a very, and there's no way there's not at least one of those on Tubi right now.
Jordan, thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. If you like this and want to support the show, we are funded by Patreon. You go to patreon.com/goosebuds. If you do, you subscribe, you get bonus episodes of Camp Goosebuds. There are dozens and dozens of episodes of being the former host hanging out, cracking jokes, making off-topic stuff. And now we're doing more and more video gameplay. Me and editor Ben are hanging around and shooting the shit since my previous co-host died. You also get access to our Discord community, which is a real red group of people. You can guide the direction of the podcast by voting on what we're covering next. You'll be immortalized forever at the end of episodes in the Book of Names. You'll hear that in a few moments. And you also get ad-free versions of all these episodes. So kind of free with ads, but no ads.
Mm-hmm. There you
go. On patreon.com/goosebuds. Thank you all for your love and support. Jordan, thank you once again. I'm sorry this took 6 months to schedule.
Worth it. Worth it.
I greatly appreciate it. I hope I see you around in the Hollywood industry space more often. By the way, one other thing to plug of yours, Jordan.
Uh-huh.
You have so many funny Jellystone episodes.
Oh, thanks.
I am so jealous of you that not only got to write on that with the great Greenblatt, mm-hmm. but that you got to write episodes with Space Ghost, Brack, Zorak, and Moltar.
Yeah. Tons of fun.
It's so good.
Jellystone. It's on Max. I think it airs on Cartoon Network occasionally. It's all the Hanna-Barbera characters and kind of wacky goofballs little town. Very, very fun show. And yeah, some of your faves pop up in that. Space Ghost, Brack, Moltar. There's a big crossover episode with the Powerpuff Girls and Billy and Mandy. And yeah, Jellystone. Yeah, maybe kind of a cult classic that I wish people were watching more.
So. I wish more people had seen it too. It's very underrated as a series.
Oh, thanks. But. Yeah, I loved working on that show, and I think those episodes turned out great.
But thank you again, Jordan. Thank you all for listening. Until next time, bye-bye. This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, especially those venerated for all time now in the Book of Names. Starting with Low Belly Hate Me, Hollis Hornbeak, Nathan Dolezal, Hey Josh Rob, Afshin, Stealth, a Beautifully Fleshed Skeleton Bates, Robert Moon, Jason Crooker, DM me, I'll tell you about the Rite Aid fraud. The Juggalopolist. Aiden is in too many Discord chats now. Well, hopefully you don't consider Goosebuds as one of those, because the Goosebuds Discord is pretty rad. Gale, formerly GDW. Hell yeah. Jar Jar Slinks. Chosen One. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Yanni Markovina. Carl. Anthony Mulberry. Brooke X. Christian Van Skeever. Jeremy Lowe, Luke, Zach Connor, Tom Whittem, Tevin Ticklebean whispers, rich people are a scam, and releases the arrow. Every month, Tevin, you fire another arrow, and every month I root for you. Matt McClellan, Juan Jalapena, Matthew Sutton, Kelsey Kinneman, Tobias Clark, Russell Kasberg, Xavier Jimenez Castilla, Rena Kemp, MC Hamster, Limp Duck, Jonas Blotterman, Chris Uncle Fart Blimp Nelson. So it's a blimp powered by farts, right? Or is it an uncle that's flying like a fart blimp, like what happens to those guys, the uncle in Harry Potter? Kieran McNamara. Lamb. Coleman Lagusa. Diet Soda. Jonas Ennevoldsen. I love we have multiple Jonases. That's great. Woof, 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 woof. A Pair of Scots. Iroh Forte. Metaphor the Metaphor, new music out now. Zambambino. Ma, the meatloaf. Burger's functioning replacement for Kevin's heart. Some of Chad's bird friends. Nicholas Maloney. Lucretia MacEvil. Mutant Astronaut. Need More Kimchi. Logan Derby. Cameron Hansen. Generally Depressing. Philip Reynolds. Nate Bit G. Ryan R. Davis. Scott Wabel, resident Lorcana guy, artist formerly known as Stinklich. Chooch rules. He does. Ninja Breadman, Megan McCormick Mason, Sprinkle Buns, Aaron Lord, Dr. Chocula, Mike Hart, SSJ Trogdor, Max Boltzmann, Farah, Mike Spaghetti Jones. Quest hasn't graded a goblin in a while. Sorry. It hasn't really been new goblins. It's kind of a famine of goblins right now. Kyle O'Neill, Kiwi of Lerv, Chevy LaGrange, Logan Kilgus, Mr. Bumpy versus the Closet Monster versus Destructo, Blarbin, Problem Child 2 on DVD, Odin's Eyehole, Turaku, Jafar, hopes your day is going well. Doing great, Jafar. Hope you're doing well too. Dacius, Wade Norcross, Ben Flolios Sayer, The Shrekronomicon, Jolly Old Jules, Smellities, Spencer Leith Johnston, Solv Sigillium Libera Nos. Ah, obviously that means all books must be signaled. That's what that means in Latin. Al and MC. Caleb doesn't have much to say this month. That's okay. Tall Glass Dump Bitch Juice is a Chaos Goblin. Hey, Goblin Grader, I think you got a Chaos Goblin to grade right there. Tall Glass of Dumb Bitch Juice. R.L. Stein's Leathery Apocalyptic Pepperoni Nipples. Ugh, I shuddered while I read that. Treehouse of Jorge Seven's New Nightmare was forgetting to update billing details last month. That was spooky. You were missed. And reminder, everyone, check your billing details. Nintendo 60 Jorts. Complex. Better a Yeti with a flaw than a Bigfoot without. Wyvern. Angus Keith, big old dumberb, stuck in the 5.5-minute hallway. Oh my god, it's a House of Leaves reference. You better get out of there. Just ignore that hallway and not do explorations of it. Think about your family. Felix, Nathan Galindo, J. Fenn Crane, Eric Wink, Ari, Andrew, Ventus 13, Ben L., Cursed Gingerbread is going on a quest. Ooh, good luck on your quest there. Snackwell's Cookie Monster, NRG, Avery, Snack Reiner. We're getting a little bit of a close area here where there's a gingerbread, a cookie monster, and a Snack Reiner. And I think, like, you guys should team up with our next name, Fog Bread. It's like a mystical bread legion of adventurers. Like if Food Fight was good. Just a Ghost, Cobalt Puppy, Zane Sade Esquire. Or is it Zane Sade? Let me know, Zane. And welcome to the Book of Names, Josh by Slugs. And also welcome, Ryan Sonura. Please let me know if I'm saying your all's names right. Welcome to the Book of Names. Thank you all so very, very much. I'm loving this new month of episodes. I hope you guys are digging it too. Thank you all for your love and support of the show. Until next time. Bye-bye. You've reached the end of this episode of Goosebuds. Hosted and produced by Chad Quant. Hey, that's me. Associate produced by Heidi Butler. Edited by Ben Ravid. Art by Brock Gallagher. Theme music and interstitials by Seth Ernest. You can contact us at goosebuds@gmail.com. And please support the show and get access to bonus episodes and more at patreon.com/goosebuds.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.